said Dumbledore gently. Yes, I thought we might hit that little snag.
Snag? Said Fudge, his voice still vibrating with joy. I see no snag, Dumbledore.
Well, said Dumbledore apologetically, I'm afraid I do.
Oh, really?
Well, it's just that you seem to be laboring under the delusion that I'm going to come quietly. I'm afraid I am not going to come quietly at all, Cornelius. I have absolutely no intention of being sent to Azkaban. I could break out, of course, but what a waste of time. And frankly, I can think of a whole host of other things I would rather be doing.
Welcome to the Basic Cinephile Podcast, Season 1, Harry Potter.
I'm your host, Ziana.
And I'm your other host, Adelia. This season on the Basic Cinephile Podcast, we are reading all the Harry Potter books and watching all the Harry Potter movies. And this week we are kicking off episode 11 with the fifth movie, The Order of the Phoenix.
This podcast contains spoilers. This movie has been out for 15 years, so we don't feel bad spoiling anything and everything about it. But if you want to watch it first, pause the episode and go read all the books and binge all the movies, because honestly, who knows how many books and movies we will end up referencing in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix was directed by David Yates. David Yates is the director for the rest of the Harry Potter movies and the Fantastic Beasts movies. The music was composed by Nicholas Hooper, who also composed The Half-Blood Prince.
We're introduced to some new characters, most notably Luna Lovegood, played by Ivana Lynch, Dolores Umbridge, played by Imelda Staunton, and Bellatrix Lestrange, played by Helena Bonham Carter.
Okay, if you had to rank those three, how would you rank them for second, third?
Oh my god.
Okay. Going for the gold.
First, Helena Bonham Carter, Bellatrix Lestrange. She's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, she's my number one of the entire franchise.
She's incredible. I mean, this is partially why probably this is my favorite movie that we get.
She's the best.
Incredible.
Ivana Lynch as Luna Lovegood, number two, and Imelda Staunton as Dolores Umbridge as number three. And that is a wild ranking because Imelda Staunton is incredible in this. So for her to be ranked last just is, it's not a dig at her. It's a testament to just this incredible group of actors.
Oh, for sure. But honestly, ranking them 1, 2, 3, it's almost like even in the series, it's like gold, silver, and bronze. Like, you're still placing, you know?
This is true.
You're not last. You're just like the last one to medal in this situation.
As we are recording this podcast, Olympians are busy doing their thing in Beijing. Oh, that rhymed. Totally did that on purpose. Should have.
Nobody else has said that before.
Yeah, shouldn't have acted surprised by saying that. If this is a medal round, all three of these women place for sure.
They're incredible, and I like that it's all like three new women that we're bringing to the table.
Mm-hmm.
They're amazing. We have just the absolute like joy and beauty that Ivana Lynch brings to Luna Lovegood. Like, she's just so perfect and ethereal and wonderful.
She's iconic. And we were talking about this. We didn't realize that like it took so long for her to be in the series, because when I think of the Harry Potter movies, she's one of the first people that I think of.
Oh, she's incredibly.
She's only
like,
in half the
striking.
Movies.
Yeah. She leaves an impression.
Yes.
And I would say that for the series, too. She comes in super late. It's only 5, 6, 7,
and 7.2.
And 7.2. Yeah. And you don't forget her. You're like, where's Luna? You're looking out at Hogwarts throughout the first four movies. You're like, where is Luna here?
When do we get Luna? She's so amazing, too, because she's striking and she draws your attention, but she doesn't command your attention, which mm-hmm. is what Helena Bonham Carter demands attention. And Dolores Umbridge also demands your attention. Ivana Lynch, she doesn't demand it, but she gets it.
Yeah, you just like naturally gravitate to her. She's a beautiful Loony Lovegood. And on the flip side of that, Dolores Umbridge, Imelda Staunton, 10 out of 10, way to just make my skin crawl the entire movie. Just like, I'm so off put every time she's in the scene, and it's like perfect. That's exactly what we needed from her.
You hate her more than you hate Voldemort.
Yeah. Yeah, big time.
Because Voldemort is just like so in your face evil that he just, again, kind of like demands that you pay attention to him. But he is, yeah, he's pure evil. He's frustrating. You're like, no, leave Harry alone, whatever. But Dolores Umbridge is under your skin. She is in your brain. She is manipulating your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, get out of me.
Yeah, yeah. She just completely, yeah, manipulates your emotions. You're just like, I just cannot stand you. And like, you could be making the right decisions. Like Voldemort, you just expect, like, you're not making good decisions. You've completely committed to being a terrible, terrible non-human now.
Yeah.
And Dolores, she's over here just like climbing the political ranks right now.
Mm-hmm.
And just, she's so bothersome, but
she's
like
so
perfect.
Bothersome. But again, Imelda Staunton did an incredible job playing her. Also, just the entire team involved with this movie. So her makeup is perfect. Her hairstyle is perfect.
The
her
styling.
Wardrobe is perfect.
Her
she's
the
only person
the
who wears pink.
Yeah.
You know, and no one else in this, the color story of Harry Potter, like pink is not a color. And so she comes in decked head to toe in pink, but she's not Elle Woods pink.
No.
She's evil pink. Yes. And then her office, perfect. It's got, they describe in the book, like, that her walls are covered with these plates, decorative plates that have kittens on them. And then they're all like walking around. And yeah, the office, the way that they brought that to life is truly incredible.
Yeah, I feel like this is my favorite movie, I think, in the entire franchise.
Yeah.
It's definitely my favorite movie that we've seen up until this point.
Yes.
And a big part of it is the way that they were able to style everything, like the setting is just mm-hmm. really, they nailed it. They absolutely
yeah.
nailed it. And I mean, you see that another thing when Filch is just nailing more and more of the
mm-hmm.
educational decrees up. Oh, Filch just coming in clutch with the physical comedy that I needed.
Yes.
Yeah, he's not lighting off cannons this movie, but he is, you know, on a swaying ladder trying to nail
mm-hmm.
stuff up and then, like, almost hitting a bunch of students with the aforementioned ladder.
Yes, getting more Argus Filch is definitely a highlight of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
He is so well utilized. And again, most of his scenes don't even include dialogue.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, it's the physical act of him nailing those educational decrees. It's the physical act of him waiting outside the room of requirement with a chair and a sandwich.
Yeah.
Like,
so good.
What a vibe.
It's perfect.
It's perfect.
It's perfect.
It's perfect. So both of us are on the same page. This is our favorite movie. And when we ranked the movies, we ranked them before we started watching them again, and we're going to rank them again after. And of course, while we're watching, we're kind of playing around with the rankings in
yeah.
our mind. Both of us thought this was our favorite before, and both of us, upon rewatching, were like, yes, that is still my favorite movie. We are in the minority. So if you're listening to this episode and you agree with most of the world, probably not your favorite movie. So I went on to, I did go on to IMDb for not for this part. I went on to Rotten Tomatoes and wanted to see what the rankings were for the entire series. So I did the Tomato Meter ranking, which is the critics who are Tomato Meter approved. They submit their rankings and, you know, they give them a score. And then there's also the audience score. So that's just me and you and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
We go on there and submit our feedback. And yeah, so for the Tomato Meter ranking, Order of the Phoenix is tied for dead last with Deathly Hallows Part 1.
That is garbage.
Travesty.
Absolutely just mind-blowing.
It still got a decent score. It's got 77% on the Tomato Meter ranking. So, I mean, I've got some movies that I love that have like an 18% on the Tomato Meter.
I have some that I think are in the single digits where it's like 8%. And yeah. I'm like, I love it.
I need justice for Bride Wars and I need it now. But that's a topic for probably an entirely different podcast.
Yeah.
But yeah, Order of the Phoenix and Deathly Hallows Part 1 both have a 77% on the Tomato Meter ranking. And I'm just going to quickly go through the rankings. So they have it ranked. Deathly Hallows Part 2 is the top movie with 96%. Prisoner of Azkaban is in second place with 90%. Goblet of Fire, third place with 88%. Half-Blood Prince, 4th place, 84%. Chamber of Secrets, 5th place, 82%. And Sorcerer's Stone, 6th place. Am I counting this right? Yeah, 6th place with an 81%. And then Deathly Hallows Part 1 and Order of the Phoenix tied for dead last. So all of these for a series, that's impressively high scores.
Absolutely.
To be the worst critically rated film in an incredible franchise, like, it's still doing well. But again, I wholeheartedly disagree. The people, let's hear it for the people.
Yeah.
The audience rating, they did not rate Order of the Phoenix last, okay? They ranked it
Deathly Hallows Part 2, then Prisoner of Azkaban, Deathly Hallows Part 1, and then Sorcerer's Stone. That's surprising. Then Order of the Phoenix.
In fifth place.
Hey, fifth place for the fifth book. Chamber of Secrets, Half-Blood Prince, then the Goblet of Fire, which is just, I mean, it's a little bit more on par with the way, I think, but, like, I love the Chamber of Secrets, and I'm pretty sure I love the Half-Blood Prince.
I was still shook, like, I
like the Goblet of Fire.
I was happy that Order of the Phoenix did a little better, but I was like, Goblet of Fire the worst? Like, I quite enjoy that movie as well. So I guess I agree with the Tomato Meters that Deathly Hallows Part 1 should be ranked lower. And I agree with the audience ranking that Order of the Phoenix should be ranked higher, but apparently just no one agrees with me in my rankings. That's what I'm learning. I'm on my own island over here.
I mean, somebody's got to do it. Might as well be you.
Might.
And also me.
Might as well be me. Yes. But again, overall, incredible franchise. And if you're going to be ranked last, you're still doing well. These are all great scores. The lowest score for an audience rating was Goblet of Fire with 74%. Again, 74% is still a great score.
Yeah. You're passing your class.
Yeah. That's a C.
That's a solid C.
Yeah. it's still doing well. All right. Let's take our first break and hear from our sponsors for this episode.
Let's do it.
Want to rate movies and write movie reviews but have no idea where to start? With the Cinephile Journal, being your own film critic has never been easier. You can log and rate all the movies you watch with an easy-to-use scoring system. The notebook has a mix of guided content and blank space, so you can write on every page and let your creativity flow. There are pages to track every movie you watch, and other pages that ask you general questions about your favorite movies, actors, and directors. This movie journal is a must-buy for every movie lover you know. Just search The Cinephile Journal on Amazon, or you can go to our show notes for a link.
Hello there, my fellow basic cinephile fan. Jeremy Hirschkorn of Jet Movement Academy here. In my experience as a gym owner and trainer, I've seen the world start to change. You'll need new strategies to keep your health in top condition. That's why I'm offering Jet Online. This is a complete training and coaching package available wherever you have internet access. Go to jetmovement.com to sign up today or contact me at jeremy@jetmovement.com. Wishing you happy listening and amazing health. Keep moving.
Okay, so do you have any more controversial opinions? I mean, we've already stated that we like the wrong movies.
Yeah, my favorite movie is apparently the worst. Whatever. Yeah, actually, I do have another controversial opinion. So, obviously, John Williams composed the first three Harry Potter movies, and he is a legend. He is iconic. He created the musical world of the Wizarding World, and we owe everything to him. But out of the Harry Potter movies, I think my favorite composer is actually Nicholas Hooper. So he was the composer for this movie, for Order of the Phoenix, and then he also composed The Half-Blood Prince. And I think out of the entire movie canon, I think those are my two favorite soundtracks.
There was a sense of fun within it, which I feel like paired really nicely against the darker tone of the movie, mm-hmm. because it did bring a lightness to these moments, because not every bad situation is going to have all bad moments. Yes. There are going to be these really fun, lighthearted times, even in the midst of being terrorized by terrible dreams and whatnot.
Yeah. No, I really enjoy the song that plays when they are flying Harry to Grimmauld Place.
Mm-hmm.
That song, fantastic. I also really enjoy the song that plays when the Weasleys are exploding everything and making their grand exodus away from Hogwarts,
mm-hmm.
and a nice little FU to Dolores Umbridge. It's fantastic. So yeah, I think it's definitely, it's playful, but then it is also, the first three movies are pure magic. John Williams created a score that really feels magical.
It's beautiful. And it fits really well with the tone of the movies.
Definitely.
Because they're very literal. They're, yes. Going scene by scene, breaking down the whole book.
Yes.
And John Williams really brought that to life.
For sure. And then, of course, we get the same motifs from those films brought into the later films.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, Nicholas
Hooper.
He's there
forever.
Nicholas Hooper, owes John Williams. He would have never created this incredible score without the work that he was able to build upon.
Yeah.
That was already established by John Williams. But, there's the tone shift now. Voldemort is back. He has a body. He's mobilized. This is the official start of the Second Wizarding War.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes sense that the soundtrack is a little less magical and a little more contemplative. It feels a little more dark and brooding and a little bit that feeling of being unsure of knowing what's going to happen next, I feel like is translated into the music.
Well, I guess that kind of makes sense because Harry, when he steps into Hogwarts, mm-hmm. he's surrounded by this completely new life.
Yeah.
And it is magical. Everything is so incredible and crazy. But by this time, he's kind of been there for a little while and you're mm-hmm. in his journey and he knows a little bit more of I am probably going to have to continue defeating Voldemort. And
yeah.
This is my life now and I'm in this world and I'm never going to not be in this world. So I feel like there is definitely a progression.
I've never thought about it that way before, but I think definitely that the first movie, it does. It is kind of a sensory overload of look at all these new sights and sounds and tastes and everything is new. Yeah, you get
the
that
pictures, people move.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is weird.
Yes, and then this one is a little...
He's settled in.
I don't want to say understated because that's not the right word. But it is just, it's a different vibe. And the music translates
it perfectly.
It's more
a score of his life rather mm-hmm. than I don't know, the world in general.
Yes. And I think if I put on a Harry Potter playlist, a lot of my favorite songs that pop up are ones from Half-Blood Prince and from Order of the Phoenix. And that's why I think those are my two favorite scores.
I mean, they're all fire. I'm never going to be angry if somebody's I'm putting on Prisoner of Azkaban. I'd be yeah.
No, the only thing that I would be upset is if someone took the time to go through and pick all of the music from the climactic scenes and all of the really intense dark action scenes and then compiled a playlist out of that. I would hate that because I would feel the world was ending and I was covered in crippling anxiety. That's the only scenario that I could be in with Harry Potter music that I wouldn't be excited about.
If you can't tell, we both really enjoy listening to soundtracks and scores as
yes.
we're just throughout the day at work, whatnot. And I have found many a times where I'm like listening to just like beautiful, beautiful calming music as I'm, you know, typing away, inputting things mm-hmm. into places. And then all of a sudden it's like a really like very intense and like, and I love them, but it's like the Dark Knight will come on and it's like mm-hmm. this big thing. And I'm like, why do I feel this anxiety coming on right now? Like this is really weird. Yeah. And then you like take a second to like check in with yourself and you're like, oh, because the score of my life right now is anxiety inducing. Yeah, yeah. So I would agree that I don't necessarily want to like go back to back to back, but it is like perfect within the movie.
Within the movie, it's fantastic. You're like, yes, this music makes sense when you're fighting for your life. When you're just trying to do some data entry or like send an email, you're like, I don't need this to sound like this is the last email that will ever be sent from planet Earth before the meteor comes and destroys us all. Like, yeah. No, we don't need that.
No, but we've got too much going on right now. We don't need that in our lives.
Too.
Leave it in the movies and then much. Like just calm me down.
A lot of those scenes with the really intense music come with our favorite character, Bellatrix Lestrange, Helena Bonham Carter. She is the moment. She is the movie. She is the Harry Potter franchise to me. Yeah. I am obsessed with her.
When I think of like the look of Harry Potter, I'd be like, yep, Bellatrix. Mm-hmm. Like she is so iconic in everything that like every scene that she's in, you, as you said before, like she demands that you see her.
Yes. She commands your attention. She commands the attention of every other actor who's in any scene with her. Most notably, there is that scene at the end where they are going to the Hall of Mysteries to mm-hmm. get the prophecy. And we get Helena Bonham Carter. And I think that's the first scene where we get her for real. Before that, it's just we see her busting out of Azkaban and doing mm-hmm. that like maniacal laugh. And then we also see her in the Wanted posters.
Yeah.
But this is the first scene where we get dialogue and she's really like it's her for real in the yeah. scene. And I love it because Lucius Malfoy is basically babysitting her in this scene. Like, mm-hmm. they've clearly been sent on this mission. Lord Voldemort trusts them both. And she is just like a kid in a candy shop. Like, she just wants to hunt down people for the Dark Lord. She is out of Azkaban. Like, Mama's out and ready to party. And mm-hmm. Lucius Malfoy is like, okay, Bellatrix, let's stay focused. Like, I know you want to kill and torture Harry Potter. We've been over this. You can't do it. You gotta save him for the Dark Lord. And, like, she's all over the place and he's trying to like rein her in and like, I don't know. It works so well for that scene.
Well, it's beautiful because not only is it like, you know, Lucius versus Bellatrix of like more calm, cool, collected and thinking things through and just like pure energy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like brother-in-law and sister-in-law.
Yeah.
It's this weird dynamic of like, we're family, but like are we, you know, like,
yeah,
there's like a weird power play that's going on there of like, yeah, you might be like another pure blood male who's, you know, like clearly risen the ranks within Lord Voldemort's, you know, inner circle, mm-hmm. whatnot. But like, I still don't like you. You're my brother-in-law. I don't like you.
Yes. Yes. There's a tension there mm-hmm. where it's like we're on the same side, we're in the same family, we're on the same mission, we have the same goals, we are on two completely different planets as to how we want to accomplish those goals.
Yeah. Yeah.
Methods and yeah, everything just completely different. But Helena Bonham Carter, she commands your attention every time she is on screen, even in these scenes where there are quite a lot of people on screen, and this is like the A-list royalty of British actors, so it's not like she's stealing the scene from people we've never heard of. She's stealing the scene from like world-class actors.
Everyone.
Yeah.
And I think that they cast her like so perfectly, and she plays it so perfectly because she's described as being like beautiful but like totally gaunt from like mm-hmm. you know being in Azkaban so long and a little, like, she's deranged and kooky mm-hmm. and whatnot, but she's also still, like, very smart. Like, she is
yes.
someone who is crazy, and she will go literally to the death, to the end, fighting for this. She has no sense of self-preservation. She is all gas mm-hmm. and just, like,
yeah.
will not stop herself. Whereas, again, Lucius on the other end is all self-preservation. He wants to further himself.
Mm-hmm.
He's aligned with the Dark Lord because their goals temporarily align, and he's, you know, willing to put in the work and the effort. But, like,
yes.
had that not been someone that he had these ideals that he shared, he wouldn't have been a part of it.
No, that's a good point. Lucius Malfoy is for himself, first and foremost. And then his family, like, second. And then the Dark Lord, third.
Yeah.
And so, because you even see with the way that he treats Draco, where it's like he wants Draco to bring prestige and honor to the family. And mm-hmm. he sees Draco as an extension of himself and as a way to get the praise and attention that he wants. And I think he probably loves Draco as much as he is capable of loving someone else.
Yeah.
But he really views his family as, like,
make me look good. You yes. are, like, an accessory to my life.
Accessories in his life. Accessories that he really cares about and takes mm-hmm. care of. But, yeah, accessories at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, Helena Bonham Carter as Bellatrix Lestrange. She is all in for the Dark Lord. She
would give everything and anything. Like,
she cares everything. About him more than she cares about herself. And, okay, the moment, I should have researched this, but no, I didn't think about it until right now. The moment where she's about to break out of Azkaban and you see her, like, sitting in her cell and her dark mark shows up on her arm, and her first response is to lick it.
That's so genius. And I wonder if that was, like, written in, or if that's just,
that's what, like, I want to know.
I am Bellatrix. That's what I would do. And it is, like, it's just perfect.
It makes me wonder. It makes me wonder if she thought of it because it just felt so natural the way that she did it. And so it seems like it definitely could have been something that was her idea. And then it doesn't even matter, because if it wasn't her idea, she did it so convincingly that you're like, yeah, that is, she didn't think about licking it. That was just a reaction of, like, oh my God, I want to taste the Dark Lord.
Yeah. Her devotion shows through. And I mean, like, that's her in the book as well, where it's just mm-hmm. like, she is clearly very attached to the Dark Lord. And I mean, they don't say it's in a, like, romantic way, but it seems like,
oh, there's something.
Homegirl has
there's
some feeling
going on. Yeah. There. She married someone because she was a good little pure blood wizard, or witch, I guess, not wizard. And that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to keep these bloodlines going. You're supposed to marry other pure bloods, and that's what you do. So it seems like she married her husband out of, like, a sense of duty. Mm-hmm. And then she is, like, obsessed with Voldemort. Like, she would like to be with Lord
yeah.
Voldemort.
Yeah, she would. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. her man.
That's her man.
And you can tell. You know?
Yeah,
you can,
yeah.
You can see by her actions that is who she,
and
you know,
Voldy loves the attention, so he's here for it.
Yeah, but he also is someone who recognizes Bellatrix is a liability.
Oh,
I want her in my corner.
Mm-hmm.
She is, like, a Rottweiler that has been trained to just attack, but she has no ability to just, like, sit back on her heels and, like, kind of look around. And I mean, you see that start to play out in the next book.
You see the power dynamic of the Death Eaters in that final scene, or, like, not the final scene, the climax of the movie, because it's clearly Lucius Malfoy is the ringleader. So Lord Voldemort put Lucius in charge. And you can tell that because of how everyone defaults to him. They take his orders. No one's stepping on his toes. They're listening to him. They're following suit. And then there's Bellatrix.
And again, that's her brother-in-law. And she's like, I know you're in charge, but, like,
overall, like, does she follow him? Yeah. Question mark. But She also treats him in a way that, like, she's his family. So she's bolder with him. She will cut him off. She will act impulsively. She'll do what she wants to do. And she doesn't have that same level of fear of Lucius because it's like, okay, yeah, I know you're in charge. Yeah, I know the Dark Lord has been working with you. And I just kind of got to come along. But mm-hmm. you see, like, her sense of entitlement.
Yeah.
Because she's like, I don't. If I piss him off a little bit, like, whatever. It's my brother-in-law. And it's the Dark Lord. He knows how loyal I am. He knows I'm one of his only Death Eaters that was sitting in Azkaban for this long, proving my loyalty to him. Like, she knows exactly where she stands, and she's bold.
Mm-hmm. She is definitely very bold, but again, the girl's a liability.
An absolute liability. And again, that's why she's busted out. She's his most loyal follower. Voldemort could have put her in charge of this mission. And you know, he never considered that for one second.
No. Well, also, give props to Lucius where props are due. This is a man who laid the groundwork. I mean, granted, again, he was looking out for himself, you know, getting these contacts at the Ministry of Magic, mm-hmm. whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, like, he's the one who's just, like, been there doing the nitty gritty stuff of, like, let me scope these out. Let me get these certain people Imperius cursed and mm-hmm. let me, you know, like, do all these things so that we can get to this specific point, which is, like, yeah, he would be the ringleader. You are running point on this. You are going to be mm-hmm. the most knowledgeable on the Hall of Mysteries and the ins and outs of the Ministry of Magic and honestly on Harry Potter, because, you know, your kid goes to school with him. You yeah. kind of, like, have these things that you're going to be more aware of than Bellatrix, who's been locked away for 13 or 15 years at this point.
Yeah, it's like that's a long time.
A long time. And, like, literally crazy. I think that they did a really great job casting her, and the makeup was so good, and I don't understand why they couldn't have done better with Sirius. Again, love for Gary real. Oldman. You are incredible. 10 out of 10 actor. Love you. But the man didn't look that maniacal. He didn't look like he had just been having the life sucked out of him. He got these, like, weird prison tats that, like, make no sense.
Yeah, he's been in solitary confinement. I'm sorry, but are Dementors tattoo artists? Did I miss that part of the book?
He's high security. So, like, I don't think that he was, like, in Gen Pop. Like, he's out here, like, being, like,
he survived because he was able to transfigure into a dog.
Yeah, otherwise he would have died.
Did we tattoo the dog? Yeah, there's a lot of there's a lot to say.
I have issues with it. But, like, Helena Bonham Carter looks like a gorgeous woman who mm-hmm. went through it. And now she's out, and she still has that, like, traces of being just absolutely, like, a showstopper. But now she's marked in a way that she's never going to recover from being in Azkaban. Whereas Gary Oldman just, like, I mean, he looks good. Like, he's a good-looking dude, but it just, like, isn't... He doesn't look like he was just, like, show-stoppingly handsome and then goes in and just is, like, skin and bones version of himself.
Yeah. No, we have discussed this in length, and we're going to continue to discuss it in length because it's my favorite talking point. I love Gary Oldman, but he's just not Sirius Black. He is an incredible actor, especially in The Prisoner of Azkaban. The way that he is able to portray his character and the lines that he reads, the way he does it, like, the man is a genius, and I cannot fault any of his own acting. It's just purely, he doesn't look like Sirius. He never looks intimidating or scary. Those Azkaban, like, Most Wanted posters that are used for 3 straight movies, he doesn't look scary. He just looks like he's like, ah. And he's like, yeah, he's clearly yelling. And you look at it and you're just like, I don't know, you almost want to laugh. You're like, what is this guy doing? Then Helena Bonham Carter and her Most Wanted, she's terrifying.
She's absolutely deranged.
She's unhinged.
Yeah.
She looks,
and I love it,
so scary. You're like, yeah, we don't want that woman out on the streets. And Gary Oldman, you're like, I don't know, maybe he'll just, like, yell at everyone. Like, what's he's going to roll up to, like, a McDonald's and be like, I want a Big Mac. Like, that's, he's just going to be loud. That's the impression I get. I don't get the impression that he's a dangerous criminal. He also doesn't look like he used to be Mr. Popular, super cool.
Yeah.
Back in school. And that was his thing. Like, he was hot and he was privileged. He didn't enjoy his family and he tried to separate himself from them as much as possible, but at the end of the day, like, there's still privileges to that last name being Black.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like they were, like, a pretty hot family. Like, Sirius sounds like he was like, he wasn't necessarily going after the girls, but it's just because he, like, didn't have to.
And then
like, Bellatrix is, like, gorgeous, and Narcissa is, like, beautiful. Yeah. And, like, I think that Regulus was, like, kind of just, like, a smaller version of Sirius. Yeah. Like, it...
They're good-looking. They have money. They're smart.
They're talented.
I think they're decently, like, yeah, like, coordinated, athletic. They're pretty decent at magic. I don't think they ever really had to try all that hard to at least be average and put in a little effort, and they're great. He's got really popular friends.
He just gets away with
clearly
stuff.
Messed up family life, so the man is tortured.
Yeah.
I don't deny that.
Which is why I think that if you were in Azkaban reliving these awful, awful moments, he hates being in Grimald Place, like, the whole time. He hates it. And these are, like, the worst moments of his life. And he looks way more tortured being there than he did in Azkaban. But you would be reliving these moments.
Oh, my God, yes. Yeah, he doesn't look like he used to be hot. He doesn't look like he was Mr. Popular. He doesn't give off, and he doesn't seem arrogant. He seems pissed sometimes. He seems a little moody. He seems a little irritable, but he does not have that serious swagger that is so central to the character, and Bellatrix has it.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
He's just not serious.
He just seems like someone that, like, you just want to, like, get a hug from. Like,
he's a cool guy.
Which, like, yeah, Harry does, like, view him as a father, uncle figure. But, like, it's because, it's not necessarily because, like, the way that he, like, looks or, like, conducts himself. But, like, they have this special bond. I don't think that, like, Ron and Hermione would, like, run to Sirius and be like, hi, what's up? You know? So good
That's
to see
true.
You.
Yeah.
You know?
They don't seem... But also, like, he does hang out with kids when he goes into the... This is just in the book, but when he goes to the cave outside of Hogsmeade in the fourth book, like, Harry always brings Ron and Hermione, and he's talked to them, like, through the fireplace and stuff, so... He is chill with talking to them, but yeah, it's definitely not the...
It's not like a Mrs. Weasley effect, whereas Harry does have a, like, Mrs. Weasley and Sirius effect of, like, he's gonna just, like, run up and get hugged. You know, like, this is my person. But I didn't necessarily get that in the books he would be just, like, so warm and cozy. You know? Yeah. Like, he's a little off-putting. He's just been in Azkaban for a really long time. Like,
yeah. That's the thing. He's a man who's lived with a lot of trauma. So as a kid, he felt very tortured by his family. His family, you know, erases him from the family tree. His mom straight up hated him. Mm-hmm. And it allowed Creature to talk down to him. And you know that he just was verbally abused at home. And he moves out when he's, like, 16.
Yeah.
Runs away and
lives with James.
Goes and lives his own life. And then he doesn't live his own life for all that long because he's really young when he gets sent to Azkaban and he's in there for a long time. So he gets out of Azkaban and he's in his 30s and he's just spent the last 13 years of his life as a dog in Azkaban. So it's like mentally you would kind of revert back to your teenage self. And his teenage self, like, still needed a lot of therapy, even without what he just went through. So it's like, yeah, this man mentally needs some serious help. He's all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sirius Black. Such a great character in the book. Gary Oldman, I love you.
Mm-hmm.
Someday they're going to remake this movie, and they're going to have a different Sirius Black, and I think there's a strong chance he's going to be better at it.
Yeah.
Whoever they choose.
And I still think that the costuming and makeup could have done something. There could have been a cherry on top of that to make something else happen. However, I do have to give props for this movie. I feel like Daniel Radcliffe really comes into his own as an actor.
Daniel Radcliffe came to play in this movie. Mm-hmm. He gets through the first couple books by just being like, or couple movies, by being very adorable and decent.
He just looks like Harry Potter.
He looks like Harry Potter, and he's cute, and he can act, and it's fine. And this movie,
he has moments of brilliance that I think probably were affected by working with Gary Oldman. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he straight up says in the reunion about how it was really incredible to work with such talented actors and actresses. Like, that
he said it was like a master class in acting, and you can see that. And more than the other kids in the cast, which is obviously like there's a boatload of kids in this movie, he gets the most one-on-one scenes with the adults.
Yeah.
And it shows his acting really dramatically has an uptick in this movie that Rupert Grint and Emma Watson and the rest of the cast don't quite have yet.
Which, again, Emma Watson and Rupert Grint, absolutely incredible. First of all, I just feel like Rupert Grint, they like reached into the book and they were like, bring Ron Weasley, and then there's Rupert.
He just is Ron. I was saying this earlier to you off the podcast. I've never seen him in another movie, so come at me.
He's in other stuff. I mean,
come at me on social media, people who are listening, if you can contradict me, because again, I've never seen him in anything else, so I could very much so be wrong.
So there's a bias here. A
strong bias. He is Ron Weasley. I don't know if he can be anyone else. Maybe he's an incredible actor and he's fantastic in every role he plays. Maybe. Maybe the man can only play Ron. But I will give it to him. He is Ron Weasley.
Yeah, he doesn't play Ron. He just is Ron. And I mean, you see that in that like cute little interview that goes around of like, what are you going to do with your first paycheck? And I think that Emma Watson says something about like, I'm going to save it. And, you know, like,
she's got her whole, she's got her 401k planned out. She's
all set. Daniel Radcliffe is like, I don't know. We'll just kind of see.
Cute and smiles. And he's like, oh, right. I get money for this movie.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
And then Rupert Grint is like, well, it's Muggle money. Like, I'm going to spend it. Like,
yes.
It's just so perfect. He's like so flippant. And I mean, like just throughout when Alfonso Cuarón made them write essays about like who their character is. And he's just like, I didn't turn one in. Ron wouldn't write an essay. And you're like, that's such a punk move. But it's like, it's pretty brilliant. On point.
But the fact that like him being Ron Weasley, he didn't plan that. It wasn't this like, oh, I'm intentionally not going to do it, and I'm going to show up and I'm going to say that Ron wouldn't do it, and this is my character choice. Yes, I feel good about this. You know, maybe I'll brainstorm some writing topics just in case and decide what I want to do. No, he just didn't do it and then showed up and was like, oh, crap. Yeah, we were supposed to do that. Well, I guess, you know what? Ron wouldn't do it either. So let's go with Ron didn't do it.
Ron didn't do it. Yeah.
And you're like, well, number one, Rupert didn't do it, but also Ron wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
But I love that. And I do feel like this is the movie where, because Daniel Radcliffe for me was a struggle for a little while. And in rewatching them, I have a little bit more grace for it.
They're like, cute and little now.
Yeah, they're so little. But like when I watch them,
I remember my being age. Like, I was like, they cast this guy. The guy can't act.
Well, and
now I realize I was a little harsh.
I don't think that the movies necessarily do Harry any justice. They really put this like lucky moments and fall down and back yourself into a corner and like be scared and these things, and I don't feel like that's what Harry was. So I'm like projecting this onto Daniel Radcliffe, who's doing all the things that I'm sure he was asked to do very well, but in this movie I feel like he taps into this like adult version of himself, this like very tortured, very like introspective. He's like very alone in this movie, and you see that he's like emotes very well, and the dialogue that he has, he like is very dynamic.
Yes.
Which I don't think I could necessarily say for the other movies.
He shows a lot of range. Yes. He has to play, I mean, essentially, maybe there's more, but off the top of my head, he has to play like three different Harrys. He has to play just like regular Harry Potter. He has to play that, like, alone, in his head, stressed out Harry Potter. And then he has to play Lord Voldemort inside of Harry Potter. So this is the book where we really start discussing, like, okay, there is a strong connection between Harry and between Lord Voldemort. And there, you know, that's how he got the scar, and he's got these powers, and that's why he's been having these visions and always felt his scar burning. But since Voldemort is back in a body, now that Voldemort's stronger, you know? So, of course, Harry's going to feel Voldemort inside him stronger. And he's never had to play that in any of the other movies. And you see it come through. Like, he is hot-tempered. He lashes out. He gets really bold in certain scenes. Like, he screams at Dumbledore. He snaps at Ron and Hermione. He has a short fuse. And he never acted like that in any of the other movies. And so I think it's cool. Like, he had this whole extra dynamic that he had to play in this movie. And I think it actually really worked out in Daniel Radcliffe's favor because he was ready for it. He understood the assignment.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. It was really impressive to see. And I mean, I love the stuff that he's in now. Later on, he's like very funny. And I feel like he just picks roles that he's just interested in. You know, I am Harry Potter. So you're kind of set for life.
Mm-hmm.
And now I just get to choose things that I love doing. This is challenging. Yes. This is, and I think that that's maybe the first time that you see him as a more adult actor being like, I am getting challenged in this. It's not just about me saying lines and remembering them and like being in the right place at the right time. It's like, how do I bring it?
Mm-hmm.
And like, again, of the trio, they're all incredible. But I felt like Emma Watson was the weakest link because she just simply wasn't as challenged throughout it, I don't think.
She didn't have as much to work with in this movie. Like, she's not utilized as much as she is in the later books, I think, or movies. I keep saying books. I think for the three of them, it's like, again, Rupert Grint has just, he just is Ron. So he's just always
in character.
He's just Ron. And then Emma Watson is the one who, from day one, showed up on set and blew everyone away. She's incredible. She was very talented as a child, and she's continuing to be talented. But yeah, she wasn't as challenged as much with her role within this movie. So she's still, like, really good. Harry was definitely the weak link up until this point. And Daniel Radcliffe, I feel like, made the biggest amount of
most progress. Improvement.
Yeah, most improvement. And kind of went, like, from the bottom to the top. And so by default, it just kind of switched Emma Watson to being the weak link. I'm using air quotes. She's still incredible. Mm-hmm. She's by far the most consistent throughout the whole series.
Yeah. Oh, she showed up.
She's a gold star actor. Gold medal.
Gold medal.
They all are meddling. This is a team event.
Yeah.
Sometimes she carries the team on her back. But this one, it goes to Daniel Radcliffe.
Daniel Radcliffe is over here just landed quad after quad. Like, just.
Yes. The sow cow, the Lutz, the Axel, the man had it all in this movie.
He sure did.
Or maybe not all, but he had more.
He had a lot more. Yeah, for sure.
His parents sent him to training camp, and he came back and proved. This is now an Olympics podcast.
We
posted by people who watch the Olympics and don't really know that much about sports that are being competed.
I was going to say, we've watched two events. So we're really diving harder into the Olympics in this podcast than we are in actual life. So, I mean,
I watched a little without you. I watched a really intense cross-country ski race that had a name that I forgot already.
I can't remember either. Zoinks.
Norway was snubbed and it was crazy.
No, Norway's all so good. So back to Harry Potter.
Let's take a break in here from our sponsors.
Yeah, maybe that's a good choice. Yeah.
And then we'll regroup, and who knows what we're going to talk about when we come back. But stay tuned.
Know. We'll see.
Changed the game just now. I have a rave.
These are the best ideas I've ever heard.
I'm Seth Rogen.
I'm saying that's the commentary that will exist.
A Barbie girl in a Barbie world.
Defiled Mickey Mouse.
Venom.
Oh my god!
Listen to new episodes weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Basic Cinephile Podcast. You are here just in time for Harry Potter Olympics.
All right. I'm going to ask you some questions. You're going to give me some answers.
Yes. And then we're going to give a gold medal, a silver medal, and a bronze medal to my answers.
Yeah.
That's the game.
There's only winners here.
We just invented it, and we're going to see how it goes.
Yeah. Welcome to our brains. So, who is going to medal for moments you wish were in the movie that were in the book?
Okay, so moments from the book didn't make it into the movie. I missed them. Okay, I've got my three already. So in the book, there is a moment where after Mr. Weasley is attacked, he is taken to St. Mungo's Hospital. And so the Weasley family and Harry and Hermione as well, I think, right?
Yeah.
They all go to St. Mungo's to visit Mr. Weasley. While they are there, Mr. and Mrs. Weasley start to have a fight. Everyone, like, wants to get out of there because it's awkward. So they leave, and they end up finding Neville and Neville's grandma, and they are there visiting Neville's parents, who are in St. Mungo's because they were tortured to the point of insanity by Bellatrix Lestrange. And this is the first time that Hermione and Ron find out that Neville's parents are insane. Harry already knows, but Neville doesn't know that Harry knows, so he has to pretend like he doesn't know. It's that awkward moment. It's so, like, it's such a touching scene and gives you so much insight into Neville and makes him an even more lovable character. So it would have added a lot of time to the movie, but I wish it was in the movie.
Honorable mention for that scene. Gilderoy Lockhart is also there, just handing out all these photographs where he's signing them. He even in losing his mind, he is the same person.
Gilderoy Lockhart is a gift. We don't deserve him. That's an honorable mention, though, except like, I've got two others. Second moment that I wish was in the movie is in the book at the end, after the battle at the Ministry of Magic. And so, you know, Voldemort has just showed up and Dumbledore showed up and defended Harry and Sirius got killed, all of that is in the movie. But in the book, at the end of that, Harry is sent to Dumbledore's office and he has to wait for Dumbledore to come back. And then the two of them sit down and they have this heart to heart. And Dumbledore, for the first time in the whole series, actually gives Harry some useful information. This is where he tells him about the prophecy and tells him that, you know, one of you is going to have to kill the other one. And I didn't want to tell you this. Like, I've known this whole time, but I didn't want to tell you because you were a kid. And who wants to tell a kid that Voldemort might kill them because it's their destiny? Like, that sucks. So I really liked that moment because it's just pages and pages of Dumbledore actually opening up and telling Harry some useful information. Mm-hmm. So I wish that that was in the movie. And the third moment, so in the movie, when the Weasley brothers, the twins, Fred and George, decide to leave Hogwarts, they want to make Dolores Umbridge's life hell, as everyone does. And they know that she has no power over them anymore because they don't care if they get expelled. So they, you know, in the movie, they basically set off a bunch of fireworks, cause a bunch of chaos, shenanigans.
A ruckus, a hoopla.
Yeah, and they leave, which I get for the movie why they did that instead. But in the book, the Weasleys have invented this, like, portable swamp, and it sounds like something you can kind of just, like, set up and you unfold it or whatever, and then there's just, like, a swamp everywhere. And Dolores Umbridge can't figure out how to get rid of the swamp, and Filch has to, like, transport students through this swamp because, like, it's huge. It's not a little swamp. It's massive. And so kids are like, I can't get to class because there's this swamp in front of me. So Filch has to, like, get on a little rowboat and, like, take students back and forth. And then after Dolores Umbridge is gone, Flitwick cleans it up in like half a second, but he does leave this little section of the swamp as like an homage to like, the Weasleys were awesome. This was really impressive magic. And like, screw forget Dolores. About you, Dolores Umbridge. So the swamp I wish was in the movie, the St. Mungo's with Neville's parents I wish was in the movie, and Dumbledore and Harry's heart to heart I wish was in the movie.
All right. Excellent choices.
Give out your medals. You get to rank them.
Oh, I just get to rank
I
them.
I just decided that's the rule of this game.
Oh, okay. I like this. I want to give it to the swamp because I just love the swamp. But I have to give it to Dumbledore and Harry's heart to heart because it's after Harry's like super angry and just smashing things up and is like,
yes,
I'm the reason that I killed Sirius. And Dumbledore's like, I'm going to tell you some things because if you're going to be mad at me, you need to be fully mad at me.
Fully mad.
Because
at me.
I've got some things that you're going to have opinions on.
Yeah.
And I liked that.
And good point. This is also the first time we really see Harry like open up and express frustration to Dumbledore. We've never really gotten that in the other books. So that's the gold medal?
I think that's the gold medal because okay. It really would have been, it would have fit into the movie.
Yeah.
And I think it would have been a more special moment that like catapults it into the Half-Blood Prince because
I agree with
it
that.
It establishes a different type of relationship between Harry and Dumbledore.
Yes. And it wouldn't have taken that much time. And yeah, it would have translated very well on screen.
And they do a little moment of that. But Harry's like so calm, cool, and collected. And that just like didn't fit the tone of it.
Like, no, and it also detracts from Dumbledore as a character because in that moment in the book, he allows Harry to destroy all of his things. And it's because Dumbledore like feels like he deserves to be hurt because of what he's done.
Yeah.
And so it kind of shows that different side of Dumbledore that we don't get to see that in the movies.
So that would be my gold medal.
Okay.
I'm going to give my silver to Neville and his family at St. Mungo's because it's just so beautiful and heartbreaking and like makes you just love Neville even more. And I think it brings a lot of, I don't know, humanity to Harry as well, mm-hmm. of being like so protective of other people's relationships with their parents.
Yeah.
So I think that that's great. And you also see that like Ron still just cannot read a room.
No.
Hermione is like thrown off, but like she comes back from it. But like Ron just like does not get it. The man is oblivious.
He puts his foot in his mouth. Hermione, at least when she's in a situation where she's like, I don't fully understand what's happening and I don't get the dynamics. So she gets quieter and listens and looks around and takes in new information and figures out what's going on. Ron just keeps saying whatever pops into his head immediately.
Yeah.
And then later you're like, oof. Nope.
Wrong. That was not place. The move.
Wrong time. Okay,
and so bronze is gonna go to the Weasleys. I love all of that, like so yes. much. But they're kind of like the wild card. They're the people that you didn't even expect to get onto the team, and then they're just like out here crushing it, and you're mm-hmm. like, whoa, how did you come in medal? Like you're not supposed to be here. And they're like, that's so yeah, true. We are.
Like, boom. Really, with your portable swamp? The portable swamp would have been epic, but it would have taken so much time to establish that. And then also just from a practical standpoint of, like, creating an actual swamp set that looked like it was in Hogwarts school. Sounds really expensive, really time-consuming, and just unnecessary when you can just throw in some CGI fireworks and have arguably more of an impact.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Okay. So the next question that we are going to ask is,
who are your gold, silver, and bronze medalists for favorite bad guys?
Ooh, okay. I feel like you should answer yours and then I will rank them.
Okay. So we're going the full series for this.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. So number one, I'm going to go Bellatrix. She is absolutely deranged and she is not a good person and she really has no redeeming qualities.
Yeah.
So
She's a bad person.
Yeah. And then I've got to go Voldemort.
Yeah.
Ralph Fiennes is so good. He is so good.
Again, he's barely been in the movies. He's only been in two, and he doesn't get very much screen time at all in this movie or in Goblet of Fire, but this one even less. And the man's presence is felt throughout the entire film.
Absolute perfection.
Perfection.
And then in the movies, I'm going to say Dolores Umbridge.
Okay.
But in the books, I kind of like Fenrir Greyback. I feel like he's got like, it's just kind of like a deeper cut of like, he's just out here causing so much harm for so long.
Yeah.
And like,
again, Fenrir Greyback is not hot. I said that on a previous episode. I was wrong. Every time we talk about him, I'm just going to just make sure everyone understands. I do not think Fenrir Greyback is hot.
Did I tell you that Fenrir Greyback, he's the one that turned Lupin?
Yeah.
And that it was because his dad was on, like his, Lupin's dad was in the Ministry of Magic. And he was like, I don't know, Fenrir Greyback got brought in for something. And they were like, he's not a werewolf. And he's like, he is a werewolf. We've got to keep him here until the full moon. And they're like, no, let's let him go. And he said something about like how they're like not human, like these really like degrading things about werewolves. And then so Fenrir went and attacked Remus when he was like
little,
like I want to say like between 5 and 10 years old. Maybe like 8 years old.
That makes sense because when he shows up at Hogwarts as an 11-year-old, he is already a werewolf.
Yeah.
So he would have been Lil.
Yeah. So I just kind of like that that's like this underlying thing of he's just out here creating all these new werewolves and...
He's got the same vibe as Bellatrix in that like he is completely unhinged. He is attracted to chaos, violence, and destruction.
But I think he's a little bit more thought out. A little bit more methodical.
Okay. I can see that.
Vengeful. Like, he's going to put more time into, like, figuring out how he's going to mess with people.
Okay.
And whereas Bellatrix, I feel like she just, like, she showed up at Frank and Alice Longbottom's and then was like, I'm having a great time with the Cruciatus Curse. Like, let's just keep going. I can't stop.
I think Bellatrix has a little more awareness than that. But she just comes off as pure chaos.
I think in the moment, she does not have control over her body. She goes into, like, Bellatrix werewolf moment. Like, the full moon comes out and she's just, like, all hell breaks loose.
But she she sees her moment to take out Sirius and she takes it.
Yeah. Okay. I'll give that to you.
Like, that was strategic. That was a tough battle.
Ugh.
R.I.P. Sirius. Okay, so I'm gonna rank your movie baddies first because this is a podcast about the movie. So I'm going to give a gold medal to... No, I'm gonna start with bronze. I'm gonna give a bronze medal to Dolores Umbridge as an on-screen antagonist. She is infuriating, she's disgusting, she's manipulative, she is also unhinged. The smile that she gives when she's gonna use the Cruciatus Curse, she is purely delighted at the thought of torturing children, so she is messed up. But unfortunately, there's two more people that are more messed up than her, so Dolores Umbridge, bronze medal. This is crazy, but I have to give the silver medal to Lord Voldemort, Ralph Fiennes. He is incredible. He's terrifying. He's such a formidable presence. He gives a layered performance as Voldemort, but I have to give the gold medal to Bellatrix for just being purely unhinged, for playing a character that could have felt inauthentic. It would have been really easy to be like, what the heck? Mm-hmm. Like, who is she? And she feels like a real person.
Yeah.
I've never met anyone like her before in my life, thank God. And I feel like I feel like I know her almost from seeing her on screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's my gold medal. In the books, I have to say, it was Fenrir Greyback instead of Umbridge.
I mean, maybe he's just an honorable mention.
An honorable mention.
He's fourth place. He, you know, if somebody gets disqualified, he's getting bumped up to bronze.
Alternate? But, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So he would be my alternate. He is, yeah, he's scary. He's someone who, even if Lord Voldemort never came to power, this guy would still have had his own reign of terror. Like, he's kind of almost like a serial killer within the...
Like Jack the Ripper.
Like a serial offender, I guess. He's not... Probably has killed some people trying to turn them into werewolves and then just killing them instead. But he is... Yeah, he attacks people and it's planned out. It's vengeful. It's messed up. And it causes a lifetime of pain and suffering for the people that he afflicts. So
yeah.
That's pretty messed up. But he's going to be my honorable mention. In the books, I'm going to say bronze goes to Bellatrix. She's still really scary. It's so sad hearing what she does to the Longbottoms and stuff. But I feel like in the books, I don't know, she's a little more under the radar. You don't get a lot about her. You don't really get a whole lot of backstory on her. And so she's scary, but I don't know. She's not as developed as a character.
One of the main characters that's part of the prophecy that, you know, drives the entire force and whatnot.
Yes. I'm going to give Silver to... I have to give Silver to Dolores Umbridge. She's very close to being gold for me in this. She is the book. If you're going to say, who is this whole book really centered around? For me, it's Dolores Umbridge. She's why I hated the book when I read it the first time, because I hated her so much that I could not separate my hatred for Dolores Umbridge from my overall takeaway from the book. So she's so infuriating, so manipulative, but she's silver medal. Gold star for the books has to go to Voldemort because he is in the entire series, you know?
And so Tom Riddle, the backstory of Tom Riddle is just,
you get the psychology of like what is wrong with him. You know, you start off with chapter one, the boy who lived, he survived this attack from Voldemort. So it's like from the very first sentence of the book, Voldemort's already in it. And I can't take away from that.
Yeah. Well, you get Harry's whole story and you get Voldemort's whole story.
Yes.
You, like mom and dad meeting, you know, like that's a lot to contend with. So I've got a question for you.
Okay.
Who are your top three characters that were in the book but not in the movie that you miss or like didn't get enough airtime in the movie? They're just kind of background characters.
So in the book, The Order of the Phoenix, Dobby plays a pretty important role. We get all of the S-P-E-W spew with Hermione. It started in the last book, but it really ramps up in this book. And we learned more about house elves. Dobby is the one who finds the Room of Requirement in the book. Dobby is the one in the book. Hermione's been going around and like knitting all these like socks and hats, but they look all lumpy because she's not very good at knitting. She's been hiding them around Hogwarts because she really wants to free the house elves, but the house elves don't want to be freed. And so Dobby's the one who has to go and clean all of the places with the clothes.
Yeah.
And so he's just like piled up with all of the all of the knitted wear from Hermione. So he's really important. He gets some comedic moments, some heart-to-heart moments with Harry. And he's literally not in the movie at all.
Yeah, he's not in it at all. And I don't think he was in the fourth book or movie at all.
Yeah, and it sucks because, obviously, spoiler alert, Dobby dies at the end of the Deathly Hallows Part 1. And it is gut-wrenching, but, like, it could have been even more impactful had he been in the movies like he was in the books.
Also, just throwing it out there, underutilized. You already have the CGI graphics for this guy, and they're perfect. So, like,
throw
the man in a scene.
Everyone loves Dobby, whether you've read the books or you haven't read the books. You're just watching the movies, young,
old. You don't like Dobby, stop listening now.
Everyone.
This is a Dobby stan podcast.
Everyone loves Dobby. So Dobby should have been in this book.
Okay, so we got Dobby.
We've got Dobby. Winky. So Winky is the other house elf. Winky had been working for the Crouches and then, you know, gets let go and has to work at Hogwarts. So Winky's at Hogwarts. She's having a rough go of it. She's basically a house elf alcoholic. She's addicted to the butterbeer. And they kind of have to take care of her. So it's just, you don't get all of the house elves. You don't get them like sneaking into the kitchens and getting food from the house elves. We don't get any of it. So Winky, my second character that I miss. And then Peeves. I will always.
Justice for Peeves.
And forever be upset that Peeves is not in the movies. Peeves is so annoying. Like, what a frustrating character. But Peeves is that comedic relief. Peeves is magic. Peeves would have been so perfect on screen, and we don't get Peeves, and that sucks. So, I miss Peeves.
So, I'm gonna gold medal Peeves just because, justice for Peeves, because yeah. He should have been in the movie at some point, at least. Like,
yes.
Ooh, so frustrating. I'm gonna give a silver medal to Dobby because Dobby is so important. And I would just like to say, for all the house elves, they underdevelop all of the house elf characters, and they are so central to the plot.
Yeah.
So then we got in silver or in bronze, we got Winky. And
she's important, but she's not as important, at least in this.
Mm-hmm.
But also, they didn't really use her in the last movie. They didn't really use her.
Is she like even in it?
She might not even be in it. Oh my God.
I don't think she's in it.
Which is really messed
up. Which is so messed up.
Because that undermines a lot of the layers involved with the Crouch family and Barty Crouch Jr.'s whole story.
All that stuff. So we're going to end it on one collaborative one.
Okay.
We're going to say the top three biggest dangers at Hogwarts. Number one. The stairs.
They're not safe.
Not safe.
They just seem to be growing in every movie, too. Like, they just get, like, bigger and bigger and taller and moving around more. And you're just like, I'm not sending an 11-year-old on that.
No. Absolutely not.
Okay, my safety issue with Hogwarts, bullying and psychological abuse, both from teachers and staff towards each other and to the students.
Yeah, it's not a safe mental place. Like,
it's free range. You can just say whatever you want to say to people. And, you know, McGonagall might walk by and be like, 5 points from Gryffindor. And you're like, well, maybe we should stop allowing bullying.
Maybe we just stop that.
Yeah.
My number three is going to be the owlery. I mean, it's terrifying. You could catch so many diseases.
This might be the real source of the pandemic.
Yeah, I think that's patient zero.
You heard it here first.
Right there.
And the next pandemic. It's all going back to that owlery. It's disgusting.
And just like the movie ended, we're just going to end on a really lighthearted note and, you know, the fun of the game, which I hated that for the movie. The tone was wrong.
Hate it for the movie, love it for us.
Yeah, we've had a good time, had a good run. I hope you like playing the games. Let us know who you're gold, silver, and bronze medalists are for anything and everything, because we love just a random opinion on anything. Like,
yes,
tell us who your favorite like pets are that are, you know, like, who you ranking. Are you going for Trevor the Toad? Are you going for, you know, Peter Pettigrew, Pigwidgeon? Like, let us know what yes. you're thinking for all of the things.
We would love to hear from you. Please give us a follow on Instagram. You can find us at The Basic Cinephile. We are a movie review and TV review account. And then obviously for this season of our podcast, we're doing Harry Potter.
Woo-woo.
So on our Instagram and all of our social media pages, you'll find a lot of Harry Potter content. You will also find just regular movie reviews, TV reviews. If you love Harry Potter, we already love you. So we'd love to hear what
you
think.
Family.
When you're here, your family. We're really stealing that. We're stealing that from somebody.
We are.
I don't remember.
I can't remember who it is.
But The Basic Cinephile on Instagram. You can find us on TikTok at The Basic Cinephile. Basic Cinephile is on Facebook. We are on Twitter at The Basic Cinef 1. That is Cinephile without the I-L-E and the number 1. Or just search The Basic Cinephile on Twitter. You'll find us. We are at TheBasicCinephile.com. We drop new episodes of the Basic Cinephile podcast every Thursday. So wherever you get podcasts, be sure to follow, subscribe. Please leave us a rating if you are loving what you are hearing. And we will see you back here next Thursday with more Harry Potter content.
Have a good week.
Bye.
Bye.